Tomorrow, President Obama will give his final State of the Union address, the first of many occasions this year that will give us an opportunity to look back at his time in office and ask whether he accomplished the things he said he would. He laid out many goals in his address to Congress in February 2009. That was his first as president. It wasn't technically called a State of the Union address because he had just taken office. But joining us to listen back to what he said and give us a little report card, our NPR senior Washington editor and correspondent, Ron Elving. Hi, Ron.
Good to be with you, Jeremy.
Great to have you. And NPR political reporter Danielle Kurtzleben is with us as well. Hi, Danielle.
Hello.
Well, let's listen back to a little bit of the speech here. President Obama spent the first 15 minutes or so kind of setting the stage. And we remember we were right in the middle of a financial crisis and the housing crisis as well on everyone's mind.
When we learn that a major bank has serious problems, we will hold accountable those responsible, force the necessary adjustments, provide the support to clean up their balance sheets, and assure the continuity of a strong, viable institution that can serve our people and our economy.
Okay, so take us back, Danielle, to what happened, because this has been something that's been covered ad nauseum, the Dodd-Frank reforms to the financial system. But were the people at the center of the crisis held accountable?
Well, let's take you back to 2009, first of all. I mean, I think what's really important to start with here is that this was a time of huge fear in the U.S. I mean, the unemployment rate was 8.3% at the time. It was about to climb up to 10%. The Dow was about to bottom out. It was in the middle of a recession. And the reason I start answering this question with that is saying that people really wanted the big banks held accountable. Now, did people go to jail? By and large, no. No, they didn't. Were banks forced to eventually, years later, pay huge settlements? They were forced to pay some pretty high settlements, yes. And eventually, you're right, the Dodd-Frank Act was passed. And some of those rules are still being, you know, hammered out. But it was intended to at least cover some of the things that caused the crisis. Now, there's a lot of disagreement among policy experts as to whether the Dodd-Frank Act would stop another crisis, would fully stop it in its tracks.
Well, and Ron, do you think that President Obama would be happy with what he accomplished on financial reform looking back now?
I suspect not. I suspect he would say that he would have liked to have seen Dodd-Frank be much stronger. He would have liked to perhaps see some people prosecuted. But the problem was that you couldn't prosecute people under laws that hadn't been passed yet, and you had to prosecute them under laws that had been around for a while. Those laws were largely written with a great deal of assistance from the banking industry and its lobbyists, and it was, as it turned out, very easy to get the banks to settle and give you a lot of the money back, but extremely difficult to take individuals from those institutions to court and send them on to jail. That's a controversial point. Not everyone agrees on it, but that's what the Justice Department said, as it declined to prosecute some of the people who at least appeared to be most responsible for the mayhem.
All right, let's listen to another piece of the speech that he gave back in 2009. Here it is.
The only way this century will be another American century is if we confront at last the price of our dependence on oil and the high cost of health care, the schools that aren't preparing our children, and the mountain of debt they stand to inherit. That is our responsibility.
It's interesting. He even sounds younger when he's talking now, listening back to that. But
look at his hair.
Well, exactly. Yeah. He's got much darker hair when he gave that speech back in 2009. But what about that? He mentioned the cost of oil. It's, of course, very low right now. And dependence on oil, less than 30% of the petroleum consumed by the U.S. in 2014 was imported from foreign countries. So he has made some strides there.
Extraordinary. In fact, just this last couple of weeks, the Congress has passed a law making it possible for the United States to export oil onto the world market. Yeah. The United States has become a contender to be the number one producer of oil in the world. Largely, this has to do with fracking and that whole process that's really opened up the United States as an oil producer again. But it also has to do with a lot of other things, the decreased demand for oil due to greater efficiency in the vehicles and due to the fact that there is more oil all over the world, and countries that used to collude to deny oil to the market are now flooding the market with oil so as to price each other out of the market. Everything has changed.
At the same time, he talked there about the mountain of debt that people have, that young people have, and he talked about schools. If I put those two things together, I get to the issue of student debt, and he certainly hasn't made a lot of strides there, has he, Danielle?
No, and I think you can really see this in how the candidates are talking about the upcoming election. I mean, look, student debt has been climbing steadily and quickly over the years. It's over $1 trillion yeah. right now. And more people are getting college degrees and are encumbered with debt, therefore. It's definitely something that people feel a big sense of urgency about, but that, you know, a divided government really hasn't been able to make any strides on.
We spoke a moment ago about the financial crisis that we were in the midst of when he gave this speech. The auto industry was also in collapse. I want to listen to what he said about that.
Everyone recognizes that years of bad decision-making and a global recession have pushed our automakers to the brink. We should not and will not protect them from their own bad practices. But we are committed to the goal of a retooled, reimagined auto industry that can compete and win.
Danielle, auto sales doing quite well right now. I saw that last year was, what, the best year ever for them. So he did do well on that point.
Yeah, although, I mean, people buy cars also when gas prices go down, and so you can't entirely credit Obama for that. But the bank bailout, interestingly, turned a profit for the American people. The auto bailout cost the American people billions of dollars. It did save jobs, the Obama administration would tell you, and I think a lot of people would agree. But that's a really interesting contrast there, that there are a lot of positives and negatives to any of these policies he passed.
And that was not something, Ron, that was politically acceptable across parties. I remember the op-ed that Mitt Romney wrote that said, "Let Detroit go bankrupt."
Yes, that did not help Mitt Romney when he went back to his one-time home state and tried to run for president there in 2012. But let's look at all the different things that the auto industry means to the United States. It's a hugely symbolic provider of manufacturing jobs at a time when we were losing manufacturing jobs across the board. And it is symbolically a huge part of how America thinks of itself as a powerhouse that manufactures things, particularly things that roll on rubber tires. So we all love the auto industry, and it was important to find one we could win in the midst of a difficult financial crisis.
If you're just joining us, we are listening back to President Obama's first big address to Congress back in February of 2009 as he prepares to give his final State of the Union tomorrow. And we can't talk about this speech without talking about health care. Let's listen to what he said about that.
The cost of our health care has weighed down our economy and our conscience long enough. So let there be no doubt, health care reform cannot wait. It must not wait, and it will not wait another year.
Now, the big question at this point, Ron, is if there is a Republican president who comes into office next year, will they be able to undo this health care law that is certainly going to go down as the signature achievement, or at least one of the major ones of the Obama presidency?
It seems clear that one of the first bills to hit that new Republican president's desk would be one repealing everything in Obamacare. Would we peel back all of the expansion of Medicaid that has brought millions of people their first health insurance? Would we go back to allowing insurance companies to refuse people who have a pre-existing condition? What would happen to people 26 years old and younger who don't have insurance? So all those questions would have to get answered. So I suspect if they do repeal all of Obamacare, they're going to have to take a little time to replace it with something else. And my thought would be, much of what is thought of as Obamacare today will come back in that eventual Republican alternative if we go down that road in 2017.
All right. Well, let's listen to just one more piece of tape from that speech back in 2009. Here it is from President Obama.
If we confront without fear the challenges of our time and summon that enduring spirit of an America that does not quit, then someday, years from now, our children can tell their children that this was the time when we performed, in the words that are carved into this very chamber, something worthy to be remembered. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
So what about that, Danielle, the expectations that he laid out? He was supposed to be a transformative president. He certainly got a lot done, but there are many people who think he could have done a lot more if he had interacted more with Congress, if he had been more willing to talk to people with whom he disagreed. What do you think about how he would feel right now and how people feel about his presidency?
Well, first of all, just to speak specifically to this speech, I'd say if we're looking particularly back at this speech from today, what we can say is that that once again was at a time of not just great fear, but also of so much happening and so much of trying to sort of plug the bursting dam at once. I mean, this was a week, by the way, a little more than a week after the Stimulus Act was passed. I mean, you don't often get that. You never get that. So that's one big thing, is that he was supposed to be transformative at a time when the nation had a lot of transformative forces already at work.
Ron?
The president expected to have a greater degree of cooperation in the Congress and with the Congress than was to be the case. He thought that getting through the stimulus was a good indication things were going to go pretty well, and he thought the Republicans would work with him and he with them on health care. It did not take very long before the Tea Party rallies had begun, before protests had begun, before town hall meetings had begun, making it clear to Republicans that their voter base did not accept the Obama presidency and certainly did not want his policy prescriptions, and they started pushing back. From there on, both sides could be faulted, I think, for how they have reacted to the partisan divide. But the cooperation that he had seen in the Senate, Barack Obama as a senator, was simply not there once he became president.
That's NPR's senior Washington editor and correspondent Ron Elving. And we've also been speaking with NPR political reporter Danielle Kurtzleben. Thank you so much, both of you. And we'll be watching tomorrow for the State of the Union. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you.